So hello and welcome to the Regenerative Rising podcast, where we're elevating voices and activating change. I'm Jean Asutigan, VP of Mission and Regenerative Agriculture at Applegate, and I'm your guest host today. This is the first time I've ever hosted a podcast, so go easy on me, but I'm glad I'm on this maiden voyage with my colleagues from UC Berkeley. I'd like to introduce you both. We have Olivia Harries here. She's the Director of Product Development and Private Brand. And Olivia is very interested in food system change. And I think she said at one point that she is indeed changing the food system one imperfect piece of produce at a time. So yes, thank you, Olivia. You're also obviously a MBA student at UC Berkeley. Now we have Emily Pelliser with us here today too. And Emily is the Associate Director of UC Berkeley's Center for Responsible Business. And Emily is a systems thinker, and she loves to bring that acumen to the corporate sector. The Business Center works with Microsoft, Google, Patagonia, and Applegate to bring this fresh thinking and ideas via the student body and faculty at UC Berkeley to businesses, especially businesses that are on the forefront of food. So we are here today to talk about the partnership that was forged between Applegate and UC Berkeley. And I could not be more excited about it. And I think that, you know, other businesses in the audience to, you know, think about working this way. So we met several, months ago, maybe years ago now. And we, with this idea of working together with the students at UC Berkeley, and we came to you all with two projects. One was this idea of, you know, what would it be like for Applegate to embark on a carbon neutral hot dog? What would a carbon neutral hot dog really involve from farm to fork? So we had the students work on that concept with us. And we chose the hot dog because the hot dog has always been the kind of ambassador product for Applegate. It's really always been demonstrative of the evolution of our mission. You know, in the beginning, you know, Applegate created a hot dog that was nitrate free, antibiotic free. It was all about clean ingredients. Later on, we evolved into 100% organic, grass fed and finished beef. And now we are launching a hot dog made with beef from a regenerative system. So we brought the idea to Berkeley about the carbon neutral hot dog. And I have to say, in the beginning, full disclosure, I was all about carbon. I thought this is the way consumers understand climate. Climate and carbon are so associated with each other. Obviously, climate and meat are associated with each other. So it just seemed like the right thing to do. And coincidentally enough, I ended up listening to a recording of Charles Eisenstein, who was one of the keynote speakers at the Regenerative Rising Conference. And he talked about, you know, the downside of just focusing on one aspect of something, like or just focusing on carbon. And he caused me to do a 180 in my thinking completely. So that made this project that we worked with even more interesting, because I'm thinking, are the students going to validate, you know, personally my old thinking or this new thinking? So Emily and Olivia will obviously be talking more about this. But the other project we asked the students to work on was to look at the business case for regenerative ag. And wherever I'm at, whenever I'm doing panels, speaking engagements, or just generally networking with my counterparts in the industry, there's always this question of how do you make change in, you know, the company where you work, especially if you're asking them to make change that involves like revamping the supply chain. And no better way to do that than to present the business case, because I think, I don't know anyone that wouldn't agree that, you know, raising animals in a regenerative system is obviously good for the animals, good for the planet, but how can we actually make it viable and scalable, you know, and, you know, is something worth doing for everyone along the supply chain? And how do we bring it to market in a way that's accessible to everyone? So I'm excited to hear, you know, you've heard my background on this whole project, but I'm really interested to know, because there was a lot of findings in these reports and projects that you worked on, obviously that were game changing for Applegate, but as you worked on it, and we'll start with Olivia with the carbon neutral hot dog, I'm wondering what your aha moments were. But I also want to say that one of the reasons I'm so glad that you were personally working on that project is because, you know, you have this, you know, you have this lens that, you know, understanding consumer packaged goods, you've worked in the food industry, so you're looking at it from various different perspectives. So I'd be curious to hear, you know, what you thought when you were working on it.
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks for the great introduction, Gina. For me, as Gina said, obviously my background is sort of in global supply chain and consumer packaged goods. So for me, just coming across this project, I was like, a hot dog, this is going to be hard. Because of course, as Gina said, hot dogs, I think you think of a hot dog and you're like, ew, it's a combination of all the pieces nobody really wants. And so for me, being able to work with a brand like Applegate, who's really sort of pushing, making sort of a very accessible product better, for me, that just seemed like a huge opportunity. So going in, I was definitely a little hesitant, because I think for me, I was like, how do we make this actually viable in a way that doesn't mean we're going to be selling, you know, Applegate's going to have to start selling hot dogs for $16 a pack. So for me, it was really sort of digging into this existing supply chain. And I think one of our first aha moments, the team was like, Applegate's already doing a really good job. So for us, it was sort of looking at, you know, if we can't bring our beef farming into the United States, how do we work with what we've got? So it was really sort of picking all the little pieces apart, finding in terms of like making this a viable end-to-end process, no pun intended. We really just sort of had to dig into the details. And that's really, I think, how we sort of went down the path of carbon neutrality and really trying to find a solution. For us, obviously, you can't stop cows from, I think it was one of my teammates, Aga, who said cows are going to burp and fart no matter what you do. So it's really, you know, how do you mitigate nature? And I think that was one of our biggest challenges.
Awesome. And your thoughts about hot dogs, ironically enough, were the same as mine when I started working at Applegate. You know, I don't even think I ate more than two hot dogs in my entire life until I started working here, for that reason of like, how do you create a product like that that's actually, you know, good and the sourcing is good. So Emily, any thoughts from you on the carbon neutral hot dog and any aha moments?
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for having us today. This is such an exciting conversation. But first of all, I would just say at the CRB, Center for Responsible Business, we are actually huge fans of hot dogs. So it was a relief to work with Applegate and to know that there are hot dogs out there that you can trust and believe in and kind of understand what it is you're consuming from end to end. Again, no pun intended, but it's just been so wonderful to work with Applegate in terms of how you all approach your different product lines, but especially as we're looking at the hot dog and the carbon neutral piece. I mean, that is a great kind of stake to have in the ground in terms of how are we going to tackle this system and our role in it. And that for us at UC Berkeley was so attractive as a project because it wasn't just about carbon neutral. And we did kind of pivot and iterate as the project went along. I know the students, you know, shifted focus a couple times as they learned new things, and looking beyond just the data of the carbon neutrality to what are the impacts across the system. And really having these dual projects where we are looking at the carbon neutral piece of the hot dog supply chain, but then we're also looking at the externalities and all of the things that aren't captured in current data modeling. And what is the impact on a much broader scale, and that systemic piece, which you'll probably hear me say a few times throughout this conversation, is really the game changer for us. We're not usually looking for silver bullet solutions or innovations. We're looking for leverage points and paradigm shifts in this much broader system as we look to scale and really feed a growing global population.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing I feel like was the most eye-opening for me was that the students actually came back with their report and it validated essentially what, you know, Charles Eisenstein had presented in his keynote, which was, you know, this cautionary tale about focusing on one element of a system, right? And that we have to take this much broader, more holistic view. And, you know, consumers, you know, when you're talking to consumers, it's like, we want to reduce down, you know, our communications to like these little, you know, pithy statements. But at the end of the, this is much more than just carbon. Yes, carbon is part of the regenerative story. And it's an important part, but it's only one part. There's this big holistic system that, you know, that regenerative represents. And it was just really interesting how the students, you know, their report and their change in thinking and their broadening of our lens really changed our minds about, you know, the entire project. So no, we will not be focusing on, you know, carbon as this element or this differentiator. But I remember the one slide that really captured it for me just beautifully was this side-by-side comparison of, you know, a hot dog that would be carbon neutral with one, you know, from one from a regenerative system and then one from, you know, a conventional system, and how there's, you know, a conventional product out there right now that's claiming to be carbon neutral, but yet it's, you know, feedlot beef and there's no, you know, no difference at all, no change at all in the actual system for raising animals. And that really, you know, hit home of like how easy it is to greenwash something like that when you're only focusing on one element, right? So it's, you know, this will be a more difficult story to tell, a more complex story to tell, but I think also one that really resonates almost intuitively with consumers. I think consumers get regenerative. I think they think it's, you know, just the name alone seems optimistic. So I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on that and, you know, talking to consumers, especially you, Olivia, you know, being in the CPG world and getting this kind of message across.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I'm of the generation where I think everyone's looking to make something a little bit better. And I think you're absolutely right, Gina. I mean, we're on a podcast called Regenerative Rising. So obviously it's something that I think customers and younger consumers are really gravitating towards. And it's something that I think comes into play in my work at Imperfect Foods as well. I think customers want to do better for the planet. They want to make smarter choices, but educating themselves is really hard. So I think when brands like Applegate are really going out of their way to come up with like a holistic, cohesive story and reason, I think it just makes customers feel better, especially when they already trust the brand. So absolutely, I think it's sort of the future. And I think customers are really excited and also willing to pay a little more to make sure that the impacts of especially cattle farming aren't negatively impacting the environment.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and is there anything you want to add to that, Emily? You know, in your work and your thinking around the systems thinking, I mean, you know, again, it's difficult to explain things when you have, you know, this, you know, an inch by inch, you know, square on a package. How do you like tell a story, you know, how do you get this out? And that's almost like the, you know, the reason why a lot of folks just want to reduce something down to the silver bullet. You know, but, you know, it's we have to make sure we don't do that with regenerative in my mind, because it's like, this is a holistic system. It's our time now to talk about things in that way. So I'm curious, with your background, what you, you know, your thoughts on this.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it is a really exciting, but also kind of confusing time for both regenerative and carbon neutrality as concepts and practices. They're kind of emerging, evolving spaces, and folks are measuring and talking about them in different ways. So it's hard to know when you're looking at apples to apples or apples to oranges. So it's definitely a time for consumers to be cautious and to question what they're looking at, but to also really drive and demand the type of really meaningful change that they're looking for, and not just necessarily trusting a little square, really understanding what goes into that. So I do hope that we are emerging into a space where there is greater understanding of what these different concepts mean in practice. But I do think regenerative, as well as resiliency, some of these concepts that are, you know, in many regards, buzzwords, but are kind of taking the place of things like, you know, basic green sustainability or innovation, and kind of that silver bullet solution concept again, is definitely leading us in the right path. And seeing that type of thinking coming out of companies in any format is a great positive step. But how we really kind of frame these things and think about them, looking at the consumer perspective, we have a professor here at UC Berkeley who loves to rail a bit on the whole straw ban and concept, because while that's such an important first step, it's also an example of so much attention and so much momentum and energy on something that is such a small impact at the end of the day, and really just a drop in the bucket, where what we want to be looking at is these larger, broader systems, the accessibility, the scalability, and really moving the needle at a meaningful level. And so that's where I think working on the Hot Dog Project and working with Applegate, we really see the potential to do that, to really move the needle and scale some of this systems level change as we look at, again, diets globally, and what is the role of responsible protein and animal protein in that system.
Yeah, so it's interesting too, like you're making me think with this discussion of, you know, resiliency and scale. I mean, these are two topics that really were brought to bear through this whole COVID experience, right? I think like no time before, we understand now the importance of building a regional resilient supply chain, right? And topics that have never even been discussed amongst consumers before are now being talked about. So I don't think there's ever been a better time in history to be talking about a system like regenerative that it just, you know, kind of intuitively makes more sense to people. And now even more so, like I think I actually have seen in my own work that there are things that I was talking about, you know, 6 months ago, a year ago, that just went over people's heads that now they understand, you know? And I'm wondering, Olivia, if you're seeing that in your work.
Sorry, Gina, just to make sure I heard your question correctly. Just things that are sort of, are you asking more as sort of like old things becoming new, or things in sort of the discourse that have evolved?
Well, any and all, you know, what have you seen since this COVID experience? Have, like, you know, how do you see this shift really, you know, propelling this whole movement of regenerative forward?
That's okay. Thank you for rephrasing. I think for me, I think we've all had way too much time, right, on our own and in our heads to really sort of think about, you know, what can I impact as an individual? And I think we've all had a lot of time to sort of reflect and ideally, you know, change some of the more active choices that we're making. I think just in terms of thinking of the nerdier supply chain side, I think it's all very much, we've had such a strong local movement for the last few decades, especially here in the Bay Area. Like it's, I think it's always probably been in full force, but I think now you're really seeing, you're seeing restaurants struggle. You're seeing, you know, farmers really also seeing their food service business taken away. So I think we're seeing the consumer perspective really sort of shift to a smaller radius. And now that we're seeing, you know, on like the importation port level, nobody can get their products through. So I think it's kind of a double-edged sword of customer demand really sort of shifting to be more focused. And it's also being forced to be more focused by just the general challenges of getting them, you know, whatever they want from whatever far off country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yes, we're seeing and experiencing the same things at Applegate. So, and that I feel like is a nice segue into, you know, when we came to UC Berkeley, it was like with this idea of, you know, Applegate wants to be behind, you know, creating this new regenerative food system and, you know, looking at, you know, regenerative ag, like I said in the beginning, to scale this in a way that's different, that's not highly centralized. Is there a way to make this financially viable for everyone along the supply chain while still bringing a product to market that's accessible? You know, because at the end of the day, if we can do this and only, you know, 1% of the population has access to it, I mean, in my mind, we've failed. So it was exciting to see, you know, what the students came up with and, you know, again, opening our minds, shifting our thinking. So I'm curious, with your close work on this, you know, what were some of your aha moments and how did this open your mind to, you know, ideas that you bring back, for example, to Imperfect Foods?
Yeah, absolutely. I think your question like framed it very beautifully. I think to have any idea be successful and viable, it really needs to be scalable. And I think Applegate already has such an incredible footprint, but in order to sort of baby step the company's way into sort of that gold standard regenerative hot dog, there are ways to do it where it's more sustainable that I'm hoping scale and demand will kind of catch up and really help support the growth of the hot dog. Because I think for me, if it's not my money, so I can say whatever I want. but if we could set it up, you know, like you have your factory a couple of miles away from the cattle farm and you have a factory and cattle farm in every region, really to cut down, I think, on processing time, transporting time, and to treat the cattle as humanely as possible. I think there's kind of the pipe dream vision. But then I think it's really like, where can we meet Applegate where they are now? So for us, it was really, I think, looking at the project through lens of carbon neutrality, I definitely learned a lot because I see the numbers. I'm like, great. This just makes me feel like I know something, I guess. It'll maybe make me feel a little guilty, slightly tangential. But did you know now when you look on Google, they say your carbon offput when you take a flight, like terrifying, that it's something that's, but I think it's also an opportunity that it's also becoming so interwoven into discourse. So we really, I think, starting to look at who's using this sort of carbon offset and carbon neutrality language, like Panera has been a really big pioneer. Allbirds, the shoe company, has really sort of pushed showing their carbon output with the shoes that they're making. So for me, it was just really like the stage has already been set, but nobody with sort of the brand recognition and I think just customer infatuation has really sort of stepped into the ring. So for us, we were really like, wow, this is an incredible white space that no one's really tried to claim. So we were like, Applegate is obviously sort of the logical company to sort of take this opportunity and really use it to educate customers and really sort of continue to build their brand.
Mm-hmm. Great. And Emily, how about you? What were your thoughts on the regenerative business case?
Yeah, and thank you for that, Olivia. I think that was a great reflection. And there's so much to unpack there, but I think what really did attract us to Applegate as a partner, and we are in a privileged position to be able to be selective about the partners that we work with and really make sure that they are at that cutting edge of driving kind of new thinking and new approaches to these issues. And for us, again, it was, you know, the carbon neutrality piece is important and climate change is, I would say, the most pressing issue of our time on every level for humanity. But, you know, really having that balance of not just the data calculations and the single point of solution, but having this report that then supports that that looks at things like the financial structures and the culture around that financing that can support these different types of systems and these different types of farming practices, because that is such a huge barrier for producers. Looking at, you know, the small local economies that Olivia touched on and how honestly inaccessible those can be at times. And then looking at the far other end of really large global scale CPG delivery and packaging products, you know, how are we bringing those two things together and what are the impacts, not only on carbon, but on the people, the environment, the workers, every kind of facet of that process. It was honestly kind of a therapeutic project to be working on during COVID, to feel like we were doing something to help address, you know, the livelihoods of folks working in this system, while at the same time making these types of products accessible to a huge variety of people and consumers.
Yeah, so it's really interesting that, you know, since we started the project and living through COVID, how these ideas that before seemed so utopian of a regionalized food system now makes sense on so many other levels, right? It makes obviously financial sense. It makes sense for human health, you know, for resilience, right? It's a business decision. I mean, we saw the fragility of this highly centralized system and its inability to pivot quickly to adapt to change. And then the need for, you know, a more spread out, diversified food system. And I think it's interesting now too, you know, before it was like the, you know, money investment was a big barrier. And now we have so many, you know, the USDA, I saw recently with, you know, $4 billion going into creating a more resilient food system. And so, you know, just curious too, like with, I know where you all are from, you know, in Northern California and the Berkeley, San Francisco area, it's sort of like the hub of this. I mean, I would say that's where, you know, the entire food movement, local and the focus on local and the focus on farms all started. Obviously with Alice Waters out there, you know, putting farmers' names and the names of farms on menus, like she really revolutionized the entire system. So you're already, you know, so far ahead of the game out there. But do you see, even with that, any new changes since this whole experience with COVID?
Emily, you want to go ahead? Okay. I can speak to it a little bit. I'm actually, like, my family is all on the East Coast, mostly in the South, actually. So for me, it's definitely, I'm very aware of how different our little pocket of the world is. But I can also see, I think, things like farmers markets have always been around. Like, my parents are in North Carolina now. Like, you always have that sort of more personal connection. And I do think you can see, even if you go to the grocery stores, there's always, you know, an end cap of local products. And I think everyone's trying to make more of an effort to make sure those individuals and processes and places and names have a space, even if it's in, you know, mass retail. I think you definitely see people want it. They don't really have other ways to get it. I think Emily said it all beautifully. There's not really a space in between massive CPG and little mom and pop. So I think we're just seeing overall trend wise, like Imperfect Foods does the same, like really making an effort to source locally, to give people platforms who otherwise wouldn't have the opportunity or capital to have visibility. So I think just across the country, and I think probably in Europe, they're way ahead of us. So I think we're headed in the positive direction.
Yeah, and something I've always been fascinated with, and an idea that, you know, we've toyed with at Applegate through the New Food Collective, is how do we use our scale at Applegate to elevate and, you know, bring other more, you know, regional or local producers along. So it's still something that I'm really interested in. I haven't been able to really, you know, fine tune what the business model would look like, but I do think that there's an opportunity of working together in some way, because you're right. It's like you have the really little smaller producers, and then you've got these, you know, behemoths, but like, how can there, I think that there may be a way to come together in some aspects that's, you know, mutually beneficial. So I continue to think about that, and that might actually be hopefully maybe another project we bring to the Berkeley students to look at. But again, like this is like just that point right there. It's exactly what I'm talking about. I think, you know, companies that are trying to make change, your focus while keeping a business running at the same time, it's oftentimes there's oftentimes not, you know, even the resources internally to look at these issues and to dive deep into them, much less come to them with like a fresh set of eyes and a fresh set of, you know, thinking. So, you know, I encourage, you know, businesses that are listening now to engage this, you know, amazing resource you have at UC Berkeley and, you know, universities everywhere, right? To engage these young people who are your consumers now and the ones of the future, and tap into like how they think, you know. And it was just amazing to me, honestly, how intelligent these students were, how astute they were. It was just and professional. I mean, the way they presented the material that they uncovered, the depth that they went into, you know, with interviewing all the various stakeholders, I could not be more impressed. So, you know, I'm hoping that there are many projects going forward that we can work on. But I'm hoping, Emily, you can talk about maybe some other projects that you've worked on or ways of working with industry that is innovative.
Yeah, and it really is the joy of our jobs is working with students and connecting them with these types of opportunities. You know, we really think about all of our work as, you know, your intentions are only as good as your outcomes. And it does often feel like we sit and talk in rooms a lot about great things, but really seeing those tangible outcomes, both in terms of the value provided to partners and to companies in a way that's actually going to really shift industry. But then also for our students, the outcomes for them in terms of the skills and the knowledge and the real world experience to take what they're learning in their core classes and apply that in a way that is significantly moving the needle on social and environmental issues, climate change, things like that. Making that connection is really the win-win-win for us, and what makes us feel fulfilled at the end of the day. And we do have a number of different ways we do that. Applegate is a great example of, you know, students really getting plugged into applied learning opportunities where they are taking an evolving kind of real life issue and tackling that and solving that in partnership with the company on an ongoing basis and continuing to iterate as we do with Applegate on new ideas and projects as they come up and plugging students into that opportunity. We do also then do a number of kind of publications and taking a minute to step back and reflect on a situation or something that's happened that, again, can be so difficult. I'm sure, Gina, you would attest in the corporate spaces, you're moving so quickly to really reflect and capture a moment where a major decision or a major advancement was made and tease that out and study that and really understand how that came about. And so we've done that, for example, with partners like General Mills, also working heavily in the regenerative space. A few years back, they made a 1 million acre commitment to regenerative agriculture. They, as a corporation, don't own any land. So, you know, how do you make that make sense at the, you know, Cheerios P&L line for the company? How do you make a statement and a commitment like that? And yet they did. So we partnered with them to actually write an academic case study that was published through Harvard Business Review in the Berkeley Huss case series on how does a major company like that make that kind of decision and make that kind of commitment in the current structures we have here in the US where you're beholden to shareholder value and that kind of tension between those different drivers. So that was another example. We had a student who did an independent study, pulled that case together and was one of the lead authors on it. And now that case study is available to be used in classrooms throughout the world. So yeah, just another example.
Well, Emily, wow, I love hearing that. And you've really brought up a great example. And it's sort of like fundamental to I think the relationship between Applegate and UC Berkeley, and that is that, you know, the marketplace is changing so quickly, right? I mean, it is really morphing and evolving at warp speed. And it's very difficult, like I said, to keep a business going and then to be able to pull back and actually, you know, get a, you know, a clear view on what's happening and, you know, how you need to adapt and move forward. So that to me is like, it's such a great way to, you know, work with the student body is like they can take that time to look back and you know, bring clear thinking to the process. And I would say that's exactly what they did for us on these two projects. So anything you would like to add to this before we close out here, Olivia? Just your thoughts on, you know, again, like this evolving marketplace and, you know, what you know, relationships like this and how they can be fostered to help that.
Yeah, I think Emily, I think very anecdotally detailed, you know, I think a lot of promises are made and a lot of them aren't necessarily grounded in, you know, reality or science or even what's feasible. So I think it's really important that you see big companies like General Mills. They're like, okay, we've said this, but now how do we actually make good on it? So I think there is, it goes back to there just being like a collective desire. Like we've realized like, okay, we've pushed our world, our resources to the point where things aren't really looking too positive. How do we sort of really sort of tack backwards, do a 180 and really figure out how can we sort of mitigate what we've done? How can we even make things better than they were before? So I think in general, you just see across the board, companies realizing too, you know, customers have a different set of requirements. And if they still want to stay as relevant and as popular, they really need to meet customers where they're going, which is towards, you know, a more regenerative and just and equal society. So it's exciting.
Well, I could have not said that better, Olivia. Thank you. That is so true. And again, it just really highlights, you know, the importance of working with, you know, people like you all that share this bigger vision of a world that is definitely possible, you know, that and, you know, work together to fill in the blanks where, you know, for example, where Applegate, you know, doesn't have the resources or whatever to look at things, you know, as broadly as we need to bring in the students. Again, it's such a phenomenal partnership, and I look forward to bringing more big ideas and more problems to solve to the students there. So it's been a pleasure having you here today and talking about this experience. I hope it's been beneficial to the audience. I just want to say that we will be making these two reports, the one on the carbon neutral hot dog and the business case for regenerative, available on the Applegate website. And we will be launching our regenerative hot dog, the Do Good Dog, in October it will be the first nationally distributed regenerative hot dog on the market. And we're really excited about that. And again, to see that evolution of our mission. So I want to just thank you so much for the work that you did on this. I cannot thank you enough. I mean, so many times, and you know, I've said this through this process, it's like, wow, oh my gosh, you're just like, it was great to just have so many things validated by the students, right? It's like, you want this to be, you know, we're thinking that this is the way it should be or whatever, but to actually come to the table and validate it in such a professional, you know, backed up way, it was just wonderful. So we look forward to working with you all again. And thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you.